Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Edition. I'm your host, Zachariah Hughes, and today we are talking about the newly released state budget. On Wednesday, the governor introduced a budget proposal that one might describe as a small pile of political landmines. It includes taxes, changing the structure of the permanent fund, and further cuts to services to Alaskans. And all of this just a few weeks ahead of the legislative session. So to unpack the budget and explain what's being proposed and how it's being received, I am lucky to be joined by three very smart, very budget-savvy colleagues. With me here is Rachel Waldholtz, energy reporter for the Alaska Public Radio Network, who's been tracking the budget in the last week. Austin Baird, political reporter for KTUU Channel 2, and Nathaniel Herz, state affairs reporter for the Alaska Dispatch News. And Nat, I want to start with you and just a line from a piece that you wrote, that this budget would, quote, butcher a barn's worth of politically sacred cows. Explain that.
I think you can say that the budget is landmines, kills all the sacred cows. It's like a gift to metaphor writers around the state. you know, there are just a lot of things that people in the legislature who are going to have to deal with this proposal are, you know, I think in any other time they would be complete non-starters, such as the governor wants to tax people. He's proposing a small income tax of 6% of federal liability, which amounts, if you average it out, it's about 1.5%. They're also going to cut PFDs to about half of what they were this year. Not necessarily a huge cut from the historical average, but when you're taking it from $2,000 this year to $1,000 the next year, you know, I think that qualifies as killing a sacred cow.
And without going too far into depth on any of them, it strikes me that this budget came out and in it are a number of things that were non-starters in the last session. Is that accurate?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you know, and just as a general principle, I think legislators don't get elected by saying, I'm going to vote to tax you more, to take away the money that the government gives you, and to do things that are going to tick off all of the political interest groups that, you know, spend money to get us elected. So mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the basic, you know, that seems to be the guiding, it's not the guiding principle, but it's like the overriding sort of impact of this is to do a lot of things that people really aren't going to like.
Yeah, and the governor actually said when he announced the budget, he said everyone in Alaska is going to find something in this budget that they don't particularly like because it raises taxes on just about everyone. So there's the personal income tax, which would be the first since 1980. There's taxes on mining, on fishing, on tourism.
And we actually have a slide about that I want to go to right now. It kind of breaks down some of the individual categories that are likely to get taxed. So when we get a second, we'll put that up. And it seems like everything's being taxed. And so I don't know, Rachel or Austin, if either one of you wants to throw, but what are the meaningful categories that would generate some new income?
Well, I mean, at the very top is oil and gas, eliminating tax credits and also creating increasing the tax on the industry. That gets $500 million. That's by far the biggest chunk of revenue that's added through taxation and removal of credits, which is also kind of a form of taxation. And behind that, there's a tax on alcoholic drinks that gets $40 million. Cigarette tax gets $27 million. The mining and fishing tax credit and kind of what you hear in that is every key sector of Alaska's economy that has a lot of lobbyists and has a very high interest in not having this actually come to pass. So,
well, and I feel like I've seen in the last few days coverage mostly focusing on the income tax and how big of a deal it is for Alaska to be facing an income tax. When was the last time that there was an income tax in the state?
1980. Yeah. It's been since 1980 when oil was booming, and there were attempts to bring it back in the mid-80s when the last big recession hit. Those failed pretty miserably, and since then, it's been a non-starter. People who brought it up probably would not get elected. So,
it was abolished in 1980 after the Trans-Alaska Pipeline was built. So we haven't had one for as long as we've been dependent on revenue from taps.
And at the same time that they abolished the income tax, they also gave everyone's income taxes back from the previous 2 years because they, you know, were so flush with cash from the new oil pipeline. So
what I'm understanding is a little bit of a reversal.
It's a little bit of a reversal for the state of Alaska.
And why propose an income tax instead of a sales tax?
Well, the governor said essentially a sales tax is more regressive. An income tax, because it's pegged to the federal tax, it's 6% of what you pay in your federal taxes, so it has the progressivity that's built into the federal system, whereas a sales tax is, you know, everyone pays the sales tax the same amount. But also that municipalities in Alaska right now rely on sales taxes for much of their funding, so you'd be layering a state sales tax on top of city sales taxes, and that could get problematic. That said, you know, it certainly could come up during the session.
And the governor did, shortly after rolling out his plan during a live interview on Channel 2, he did say that he's very willing to consider the idea of a sales tax if that's what legislators want.
I want to get back to the question of what legislators want and don't want in just a second. But before we go there, I do want to pull up something that the governor said from his press conference earlier in the week. And if I have it here, it says that doing nothing is not an option, but what the governor said at the time is there's no perfect plan other than the plan that gets things done. And Rachel, the shot behind him says that doing nothing is not an option. What does the governor mean by that?
Yeah, he actually had this sort of giant cardboard slide next to him when he gave the announcement. It said doing nothing is irresponsible. And his point is, you know, so the heart of this plan is completely sort of what he calls replumbing state finances. It's transforming the permanent fund. And, you know, and that results in cutting the permanent fund dividend, the PFD check, in half next year. And his point is, look, yes, we're cutting the PFD check in half next year, but if we don't do anything, we are burning through our savings at a rate where we're going to go through our savings, and that's going to put future dividends completely at risk. The administration says by 2020, we'd be sort of through our savings and be facing that option. And then, you know, we might actually be spending the permanent fund itself.
And one of the big sort of arguments that the governor is making is that the money in the savings account is sort of an important part of the plan to sort of replumb the permanent fund. The idea is that if you put that money in the bank and you put it in investments, the same sort of pool of investments where the permanent fund is currently sitting, that money starts making money for us now, and you know, presumably would continue to do so far into the future, and you know, would produce sort of a sustainable return. Whereas if we continue to spend that money at a rate of $3.5 billion a year, we sort of lose that future earning potential.
So, is it accurate to say that you know, this budget proposal and some of the switches internally to the plumbing, Rachel, is how you put it, that it would peg the operating budget more to returns on the permanent fund and some of the overall gains in this highly diversified account, instead currently of relying on commodities and in particular the price of oil to finance the operating budget? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, essentially what it's doing is right now, historically, the state budget has relied on, you know, direct revenue from oil and gas production, and the PFD comes out of the, you know, earnings of the permanent fund. And this would sort of switch that. It would say, essentially, we're going to take all of our savings and put it into sort of this one sort of giant reserves fund, and we're going to live off the earnings of that fund, and we're going to take all of our production taxes and all of the revenue that currently goes straight into the general fund, we're going to put that into this investment fund as a way to sort of like even out the volatility and get us off the boom and bust cycle of oil prices and try to generate a steady stream of income for the state. And PFDs then would come, instead of from earnings, it would come from a portion of state royalties. So PFDs would be tied to the sort of more volatile resource market, and state government tied to the less volatile investments.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, that's going to be the politically tough part of this, is not only are the checks getting smaller in the immediate future, but with oil prices still extremely low, the volatility is shifted to Alaskans, it's shifted to regular people and away from the operation of state government. So instead of having it be an indirect hit, it's a direct hit that people will see with an exact number on it. So,
and how politically feasible is this?
We'll find out.
I mean, you heard, I think, initial reactions from the legislature. So first of all, I think an important thing for people to remember about this is there are sort of constitutional restrictions on what you can do as a legislature with state money. Part of that is that it's going to take a 3/4 vote of the legislature to do some of the transfers that the governor says is necessary to make his plan work. That's like, you know, I think it's pretty safe to say that even getting a 50% or 51% approval in this legislature for this plan that's not a job that many people, I think, would sign up for. And then when you raise that threshold to three quarters, like, it might be hard to get a quarter of the legislature to sign on to this plan. So that's a, sort of an initial hurdle. And then, you know, people immediately were expressing skepticism about the individual details, depending on where they were.
And let me get back to how the reactions have been. Before that, I mean, is the point in introducing a budget like this that it'll survive 100% intact? I mean, is the governor going to go to the mat to make sure that every single proposal, on mining, on 10% drink tax, or 10 cent drink tax, like that every single one of these advances? Or is the point maybe to kind of give a more radical option and then through consensus meet somewhere in the middle?
Well, so the short answer is no. The goal is not to have every single piece of this go through. And it's kind of a statement of priorities and a general overall vision. And I'm not exactly sure how to interpret what his vision is for the budget. But certainly this is a starting point, and that's where he did express willingness to look seriously at a sales tax and criticism of an income tax from both parties, from Democrats and Republicans. So it'll be a long process, and because it does take the 75% vote, that means that the Democratic coalition is going to play a role again. And could
why do you say again?
Again, because last year they were able to hold out, and the Constitutional Budget Reserve is one of the main state savings accounts, and there had to be a draw from that to fund state government for this current fiscal year. And it took a 75% vote to pull the money out last time, and it will again. And of course, it took two special sessions and a lot of time to get a budget passed. So maybe again.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you saw sort of two major reactions, like coming from the Republican majorities in the House and Senate. You heard there aren't nearly enough cuts in this budget, and before we consider any of these new taxes, we need to see way more cuts. The governor is proposing about, you know, $100 million in cuts, and, you know, the numbers you're hearing from the House and Senate are much higher than that. And then from the Democrats, you heard, not thrilled about cutting the PFD. They think that that's sort of a regressive way to get income, and not totally thrilled with the income tax. I know Nat has done more reporting on this, and... Yeah.
Yeah, what are the parties saying, Nat? Are they digging into the trenches? Is there like a firm across-the-board line on either side?
No, I think, you've got sort of a spectrum of, very liberal to less conservative to very conservative. And, it's kind of, you get kind of predictable responses from folks as they fall along that spectrum. And, I think very few people are very few lawmakers, I think, completely say, red pen, veto, whatever. I think some of them are a lot more inclined to dismiss big chunks of it than others. I think, the most conservative legislators, the folks in the Matsu Valley, for example, Representative Lynn Gaddis, who's from Wasilla, when I talked to her yesterday, I said, what was your reaction to seeing the governor's budget with 2.5% cuts compared to, 9% last year? And she said, well, how marijuana just got legalized? I thought the governor may have, found his way into that. She was joking, but I think,
because they're saying this, the cuts last year were not enough. We have to keep going.
We have to keep going far deeper than, what we did last year. I mean, I think maybe the amount might be the same, but the cuts last year, they cut the capital budget a lot. So it's really, to go... A lot of these, the cuts for this coming year would have to come from the operating budget mostly, and that's, a pretty tall order. And then the folks on the left really want to see more come from the oil industry. There was, a pretty big hit, a huge hit to the smaller, medium-sized explorers, developers who are looking for, like, natural gas and oil in Cook Inlet. But the folks up on the North Slope, the Exxons, the Conocos, the BPs, we just sort of finished a big battle about their tax structure last year, and it's sort of, I think a lot of people sort of consider that settled. They're going back to them for about $100 million this time around, but in sort of the grand scope of the whole state budget and the deficit, there are at least some Democrats say we should be getting a lot more from them.
And Rachel, you were looking at oil taxes and how that's restructured under this plan. What are the big takeaways from the governor's offer?
Yeah, well, I mean, the big thing that they do is they pretty much abolish the system in place right now for offering tax credits for oil exploration and production. So these are credits to help companies, you know, go out and find more oil and produce that oil. And so that system they want to convert into a loan fund, and there's not a ton of details out there on what that would look like, but that's a big deal. And then the other thing is that they want to, what they call, harden the minimum floor. Right now there's a minimum tax of about 4%, but it's possible to dip beneath that with tax credits. They want to harden it and raise it to 5%. And yeah, some of the Democrats have said 4 to 5%. Let's 11-12%. So.
Mm-hmm. And I want to read a quote to you guys from some. This is, came out in the reactions from the Alaska Chamber of Commerce, and what they said is: business will not invest in an undisciplined state that continually returns to taxation as an answer to unsustainable spending. Embracing the necessity for sustainable state spending is imperative, and only after that difficult work is completed is it appropriate to discuss other revenue sources. Nat, to me, that sounds like what you were saying is the more conservative kind of party approach of before we talk about taxes, we need to keep cutting. But what's the overall response been from the for-profit and nonprofit business community in Alaska?
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that the new CEO of the Alaska Chamber that issued that statement, that is Curtis Thayer, who was the commissioner of administration under former Republican Governor Sean Parnell. So I think, you know, you're getting a pretty conservative, you know, I think that's sort of on the conservative end of the business spectrum. Obviously, they're sort of representing a big group of businesses, but I think I think there are certainly, I don't think it's sort of monolithic, like you have individual legislators and people in Alaska falling along the political spectrum. I think it's the same for businesses, for the nonprofit organizations that are getting involved. It's really, right now, we've heard most loudly from two entities. One is the Rasmussen Foundation, which is a big nonprofit that's sort of civically active. And they had a pretty firm statement that came out when the governor released his budget that said, we really think, like some of these more conservative legislators, these cuts need to be deeper before Alaskans are going to be ready to sign off on, you know, giving away some of their PFD or taxes. It's a pretty similar response among the business community that, I think they're interested in healthy state spending, a healthy economy, but they're not, I'm running out of steam.
Okay.
The session hasn't even started.
There is so much longer to go. That, by the way, I don't know how many of you are going down to Juneau in a few weeks, but what does this do to the odds that the session will last actually 90 days?
I don't think there was ever a chance it would be 90 days. And this is just the next step in a very, very long process. So
last year it took 140 or 145 days, and we weren't talking about any taxes. So
yeah,
Austin, I don't think you've ever been accused of being a political optimist. So
no,
it's good
I'm
to
not.
Hear such a candid dissection. I do want to ask you, you've reported on the 10-cent drink tax, and tell me why that's not just a novelty, why that's not just a funny kind of little add-along.
Well, I mean, one piece of it, Alaska already has, relative to the other 49 states, relatively high taxes on alcohol, relatively high taxes on cigarettes, and this would add 10 cents per drink, which is not the way that it's typically calculated from a tax standpoint. They would usually calculate the tax by gallon of alcohol, and they calculate it separately for beer, liquor, and wine. And the 10-cent tax would mean if you buy a six-pack, it's 60 cents more. If you buy a 750-milliliter bottle of rum, that's an extra $2.40 because there are 24 standard drinks in that. So I
can see the campaign commercials now. Like, Governor Walker is coming for your six pack of Budweiser. Like,
yeah.
Call Governor Walker and tell him.
Yeah, and so you'll have that piece of it, and it's a tough sell. It does get $67 million if they get the alcohol and cigarette tax through. And the cigarette tax, if that goes through, that would put Alaska at maybe the second highest, but certainly one of the very highest in the country at $3 per pack.
And how much does oil, you know, taking other, you know, kind of new taxes off, how much does oil still play a role in this budget? I mean, is it pegged at a certain price, or are we completely liberated from fluctuations in the global energy market if this makes it through?
We will never be liberated from fluctuations in the global energy market. I mean, this budget was built around sort of $50 a barrel oil. But I mean, you asked the governor sort of what happens if we go lower.
Is 50 even feasible right now? Didn't it dip lower this week?
I have the printout of the tax division from the state revenue department. It's at $37.84 and sliding for the past 2 weeks. So if it ends up being lower, the budget, the budget calculations are off. And the governor said that his overall sovereign wealth plan, which was the permanent fund retooling, that would still work. But the other pieces, the immediate operating budget, could be tough if they can't get that plan through. So,
and what does our capital budget look like?
That's interesting, actually. So the capital budget is... the idea with the capital budget, so last year they cut the capital budget, and it was essentially we're trying to make our federal match. So we're trying to spend enough state money to get all the federal money we're entitled to and not do much more than that. And this year they're proposing to do that, but instead of spending the money, sort of as cash as from the general fund, they want to issue general obligation bonds, which would have to go to a vote. So the idea is we need to get that federal match, but instead of spending money to get it, we're going to borrow money to get it, because right now we can borrow money more cheaply than what we're earning more on our savings, so let's not spend our savings. Let's borrow money because we can borrow it pretty cheaply. So that's sort of an interesting idea.
I guess my big question in all of this is, under this plan, would we end the structural budget gap that we've been looking at when oil dips below a certain point and we can't pay stuff out? I mean, would this basically kind of close the gap that's plagued budget discussions?
I think it's designed to. What they are saying is that I think there would still be a relatively small deficit this year of maybe like a few $100 million. And then by not this coming year, fiscal year, the year after that, but the third year, the budget would balance, which is that's pretty significant. And I think that's still dependent on investment returns, oil production, oil price. But I think, I think you can safely say that even if it doesn't get all the way there, going from here, it would probably go from here to, at least sort of here, and that the sort of huge structural problem would be at least somewhat taken care of.
And it is worth pointing out, though, that it does take the draw from the constitutional budget reserve. So it's balanced in a sense, but it is also depleting state savings accounts to get to a trajectory where it balances out in the long run.
And is there different treatment for urban communities versus rural communities? I mean, does this spread the pain evenly across the state? Or anytime that we talk about income tax, I sort of think of a little bit more grief coming from the rail belt. But is that accurate?
Well, I mean, that's something that was talked about a lot and has been talked about by more or less everyone that I've spoken with, from the governor to legislators. And one concern is about the motor fuels tax. It does not apply to heating fuel. But if you're paying, $6.50 a gallon in Barrow, or if you're paying $12.50 a gallon in Wainwright or wherever else, that is going to be a bigger tax than here, where it's $2.20 a gallon. So it's a bigger impact on rural communities. And the idea of going for an income tax was to kind of level that out and not have as big of an impact on rural communities, or a disproportionate impact.
Yeah, and we had a story on APRN this week, and it was Pat Pitney sort of with her roadshow. She's the budget director, and she's been traveling around the state talking to people about the budget. And one of the points she made that I thought was interesting is the PFD, for instance, means really different things in different parts of the state. In the rail belt, a lot of times it means it goes into a savings account, it goes towards college, it goes for plane tickets, and in rural Alaska, where you might be a little bit more sort of cash poor economies, it might be more central to people's budgets. And so what this means in different parts of the state is, it really differs.
I guess my last question on a lot of this topic is, can the governor survive throwing out a budget like this? I mean, he's not up for election this cycle, but many legislators are. But down the line for him, is this kind of a political death wish, or is it responsible economic policy to kind of throw this out there?
Could be both, but what he's thrown out is not going to be particularly popular in many ways. But what could he do that would be politically popular? The line that stood out to me was the quote from Jay Hammond, where he said, you know, I knew this day would come, but I didn't know I'd be the one standing here when it did. So he's the guy standing here, and this is his first stab at it, and politically very difficult no matter what he does.
I mean, I think it's remarkable. I mean, you know, you can certainly argue with the policies that the governor is using to get to his stated goal, but you know, he's done a lot of things here that are not what you would expect from politicians. I think part of that is that the governor is not really a politician. He was an attorney who, for you know, decades has been working on oil and gas issues for decades. He spent a lot of his career kind of yelling at the legislature and to try to get the governor to do what he wants without success. And now he is the government, and it's an interesting approach to just see him take it on so directly. You know, there's not a lot of sort of dissembling, or it doesn't seem like there are really any tricks here. It's a pretty direct approach.
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry, Rachel, that we couldn't end with a last word for you, but that's all the time that we have on this edition of Alaska Edition. Thank you to all three of my guests for joining me and taking their lunch break to explain the budget. And thank you for joining us as well. I'm Zachariah Hughes.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.